It's 12:36. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. All right, everyone out there, I want you to quick take a breath, hold it, exhale. All right, I just changed your life. Maybe rather Peter Bregman just changed your life. He joins us on a phone line now. Peter, how did I do with that?
I did it along with you, and it felt great, or I'm already in a better mood.
Did I change your life, Peter?
At the right time, that could change your life.
Peter,
but right now, it just made my life slightly better.
Well, I'll go for that. Peter is the author of 4 Seconds, and you've probably seen him on, I've seen some of your TED Talks, and I know you wrote a book 18 minutes earlier, so you're down to 4 seconds this time. But the idea is that it's sort of like an interrupter, isn't it, this 4 seconds? It's the idea of taking what would be your immediate reaction and then just stepping back from it and maybe considering a different way. And that's probably something that we could use very often in business.
Yeah, here's what happens often to many of us, myself included. I tend to write the books that I need to read, is that we have a reaction to something. It might be, anger, it might be embarrassment, it might be fear, whatever that reaction is. And usually when we have a reaction that's an emotional reaction, we get an amygdala hit. The part of our brain that activates is the part of our brain that used to run away from saber-toothed tigers. It's the sort of fight, flight, or freeze reaction. And usually how we operate out of that place, what we do from that place, is not particularly effective to the situation we're in. What taking a deep breath does is it slows down that moment. And what we want is enough time for the stimulus to go from your amygdala, that reptilian part of your brain, to your neocortex, which is the part of the brain you think from. And if you can give it enough time to get there, you're much more likely to have a smarter, more rational, more effective, more outcome-driven response than if you react in that fight, flight, or freeze.
So the
4 seconds is just the tipping point.
Does it go back to the saber-toothed tigers, or does it go back to just childhood when we reacted sort of quickly to get out of something?
That part of our brain helped us in the saber-toothed tiger era, but we absolutely use it. It's ingrained in us. It's genetically ingrained in us. So, when you feel like you're in a situation that reads danger, you react in a way that protects yourself. But most of the situations, when your boss yells at you in the hallway, that's not actually the same as a saber-toothed tiger. It's not as dangerous as you think it is. And if you respond in a way that you might respond to a life or death situation, you respond out of fear or anger or frustration, you may make the wrong move.
All right, so let's go into the office and an employer sitting there behind a big, beautiful oak desk. He's got his feet up and the employee comes in. The employee delivers some bad news. The first thing is the boss might say, "What, you idiot? How can you do that?" You would suggest otherwise and create sort of this space between what we feel and what we do. And what would be a more appropriate response from the employer?
It's a great example that you give because it happens to us all the time. The first question I would ask you, and I would ask that we ask ourselves, right, is to take that breath and ask one question, which is, what is the outcome that I want in this situation? So oftentimes, you respond based on the situation that you're facing without thinking about where you want this to go. And the outcome just happens to be an ancillary impact of however you respond. Instead, let's make it the strategy. So the guy comes in your office and the employee comes in your office and says, I've made this horrible mistake. I've lost this money. And you're all angry. And the first question is, what outcome do you want? And if the outcome you want is to humiliate him because you think that's going to work, then maybe, you yell or you get frustrated. If the outcome is improved performance or learning or, making sure that this doesn't happen again or, holding them accountable in a way that their performance changes,
or just getting to
you might want to think about doing something unnatural.
I was going to say, or just getting to the bottom of it and not scaring the employee out of making up some sort of story.
And even that is dangerous. Go ahead, sorry.
Well, I was going to say, all right, so let's just say the boss wasn't enlightened. The employee is berated by his boss. She walks out and she comes upon her coworker and she's telling this guy what happened. And the guy says, you feel better. It's okay. You tried your best. You say that's not a good idea either. The idea of trying to make someone feel better ends up not paying off for anyone involved, except maybe the maybe the guy with the motivation to make the girl feel better, but it doesn't help the girl at all.
Yeah, you know, it's also a great point, and it's our gut reaction. It's the kind of thing that we would normally do. But in reality, you're arguing with someone's sort of emotional state at that point. So we want to make them feel better in part because we want to feel better, because we don't like being around someone who's sort of sad or disappointed, and we want to feel useful in that situation. We want to be the guy who says the right thing. And so oftentimes we'll sort of, you know, try to say, oh, don't feel so bad, or it happens to all of us. But in reality, it's actually better to just sit there with them a little bit and let them, like, connect with them in a way that doesn't value them or devalue them based on that most recent performance. And when that happens, they feel their own particular worth. You're not convincing them out of your feeling. You're respecting them and what they're feeling. And from that place, they can stand on their own 2 feet in a more grounded way.
Have you seen the video on, it's on YouTube, it's everywhere, called It's Not About the Nail?
Oh, yes, I love it.
Okay,
I love it. It's great.
Well, you know, that sort of speaks to gender differences, but let me just explain it. So it's this girl, and she's saying, you know, I've got this terrible aching, and I don't know what to do about it, and her boyfriend's looking at her, and she's got like a 4-inch nail coming out of her forehead. And so the boyfriend wants to fix it. He wants to say, look, take the nail out. The girlfriend is saying, you're always trying to fix things. I just want you to understand. It's not about the nail. And that's kind of what you're describing here, aren't you? I mean, it's better to empathize than it is to try to fix sometimes.
Well, it depends on what they want. Meaning, I will be with friends and someone will be describing this problem. And I do this with my wife as well, is I'll have to pause for a second as I'm listening. And I'll have to say, so tell me what you want from me right now. I mean, do you want me to help you solve this? Because look, I'm an author and a consultant and a coach, and like, I'm very good at solving problems. And that's my natural default. That's where I go. But do you want me to solve this, or do you want me to just listen to you? And, you know, sometimes the person will say, I actually just want you to listen to me. And that's very hard for me to do because I see the nail and I want to remove it. But I also have to respect where they're at and what they particularly want. And at that point, I could just say, okay, I'll just listen to you. Or sometimes they'll say, give me advice. Yeah. And then I'll have permission to give the advice.
I will post that video later, but that's everyone's homework to watch that. It's not about the nail, and you'll understand why all her sweaters are snagged. We've got just a second
it's
left.
Hysterical.
It is very funny, and it's so true. But I want to talk, too, about goals and why you say sometimes, you know, setting a goal in the office can end up being counterproductive.
You know, the goals, our wholehearted, driving, not unstoppable pursuit of goals often gets us in trouble because we achieve the goal, but the way we achieve it does damage. So I talk in the book about these examples where, you know, a quarterback, you know, was throwing too many interceptions and he was given this goal and paid for a reduction in interceptions, right? As oftentimes we're paid for our goal. Mm-hmm. And that year, he actually made a lot fewer interceptions. It was great, right? Except that the team did less well because the way he achieved his goal is by just throwing fewer passes. So he achieved the goal of fewer interceptions by actually letting the balls leave his hand less frequently. Ultimately, that's not the actual goal. You find that people, when they have a really strong goal, I'll give you a great example. Right, a great example of pursuing a goal, you know, at the risk of everything else is Volkswagen, and the way they cheated computers in order to reduce the emissions testing.
Perfect.
On the diesel cars. Now, that there's a lot that's been written about that. It's really clear that there was a huge push by Volkswagen leadership and management on hitting goals that they had set. When you push that hard to hit a goal, oftentimes you'll end up finding ways to achieve it that don't actually give you what you want in the end. And so I think we should have foci. We should be thinking about what we're doing carefully. We should, you know, focus on areas that we want to improve. We should, you know, do all of that. But be careful about setting a goal that we're too aggressive at pursuing.
That's Peter Bregman, the CEO of Bregman Partners, Inc., and the author of 4 Seconds. Peter, it was wonderful to talk to you today. I appreciate it, and I hope we can do it again.